Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous. We have reached 100 authors of the week. Hooray! So here we are in the Society Club in Soho, and Babette Kulik has very kindly let us, Valerie and I, take the space. So today on Radio Gorgeous, I'm happy to introduce Valerie Grove, a journalist who has worked on the Evening Standard and the Times, as well as many other publications. She also writes biographies. She's written about books about Dodie Smith and John Mortimer. But today we're talking about her republished and updated biography of poet, novelist and broadcaster Laurie Lee, and particularly in true Radio Gorgeous style about his love life and the love of his life. Hello, Valerie. Welcome
Hello.
To
Radio Gorgeous. How are you?
I'm extremely well. I'm delighted to be here. It's the most marvellous place.
There's a book that was put into your hand upstairs.
Yes.
It's called The Firstborn.
Now that, you see, the
Laurie Lee.
There we are. The Firstborn by Laurie Lee, published 1963. Laurie Lee wrote this book about his firstborn, how he became a father for the first time at the age of 50. An unexpected late joy in his life. Okay.
But what's interesting is that we know that is not true.
We know she had a half-sister who was born in 1939, long before this book was written.
Very big age gap then.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Laurie Lee, he started out as a poet in the 1940s, mainly, and then he started writing these volumes of memoir. And Cider with Rosie was on the syllabus for years, brought him a handsome income, because it was always in print and on sale. As Laurie said, it wasn't all sunshine and poppy fields and hay, you know, and rolls in the haystacks with a pretty girl called Rosie. But no, he says, you know, most of the time it was raining and chaps were walking around in pieces of wet sacking.
And very poor.
Very, very poor. His father had gone off to the First World War, never came back to live with the brood of children.
He ran off with another woman.
He ran off with another woman. Anyway, is that all his life he was nurtured and cosseted and helped by women. But the first woman and the star of Cider with Rosie is not Rosie at all, but his mother, Annie. Now, Annie was a housemaid, came in Gloucestershire, rural, and had to leave school at about whenever you did then, 13, 14, to help her mother at home, sick mother. She had lots of brothers to look after, and that's what girls did then. And then she answered an advert in the local paper for a housekeeper for a chap, Reg Lee, who had just lost his first wife, and she'd left him with four children, three girls and a boy, played the organ in church. Yes, he was slightly a cut above, but very full of himself. But she was a loving, laughing country girl who adored these daughters, these stepdaughters of her that she took on, and got on very well. And then they got married, and she then produced Laurie and his two brothers. And Annie is the first woman who was enormously important to him because she taught him about poetry and painting and flowers and the countryside.
Because she was kind of like a latent artist in a way.
She was. Mm. And she could write beautifully. Her letters are marvellous. He went off to London on foot. I mean, he went with his violin. He had been taught the violin. That was a great asset. But how did he become one of the foremost published poets in the 1940s? This is what the biography tells. There's all, in his life, a series of women who absolutely loved him. They gave him the connections with all the worlds he needed, including the real love of his life.
Yes, he's a central person. I mean, literally in half the book, she's that important.
Yes. He always said, I only went to Spain because a girl in Slad had taught him to say un vaso de agua, por favor, which means, you know, can I have a glass of water, please? How could there be? In the early 1930s, in Slad, Gloucestershire, everybody came from Gloucestershire. Mm. Nobody came from anywhere else. And when Laurie writes that I had to leave home because all the local girls were saying, marry me and settle down, singing their siren songs, well, they were, and they were Molly and Betty and others, all of whom left these wonderful letters, breathless letters, telling him how marvellous he was. including their own
parents.
Was
he very handsome as well?
He was quite handsome. He looked like Rupert Brooke, really. He had a fair lock of hair falling over his forehead and blue eyes. And he loved reading and he loved poetry. He loved painting. He loved, he was very good.
All the things women love. All the things women love, though, aren't they?
Yes, he was the perfect boy.
Yeah. We have reached 100 authors of the week. Hooray!
So he was musical, poetic, artistic, and sweet-natured. And then, of course, when he got to Spain, he was taken over by a middle-aged, blue-stocking English lady called Wilma. He never, ever, in his any of his books, acknowledged Wilma. She was the one who not only housed him and sheltered him and nurtured him and sent him to art school and really thought he was, she thought he was brilliant. She sent his poems to T.S. Eliot. But she sent him off.
She launched him, didn't she?
She launched him. Yeah. She was launched him. Mm. But the real launching pad was the woman he met in Cornwall, in Gunwallow, on a beach. Wilma sent him to art college, but she also sent him to Cornwall, where he saw, or she was, he was seen playing his fiddle on the beach early one morning. This woman called Lorna, and she was the love of his life, and she changed everything for him. Because she was frightfully well connected. He describes her in one of the books. He says, you know, she was rich, demandingly beautiful. She was always waiting for him when he came home from his travels. And she was married with two small boys. She left her husband for Laurie for a while. She'd asked him to play for her on this beach, and he was immediately smitten by her. She was fantastically beautiful. You've seen the photographs in the book.
She's got
of her
round blue eyes round and blue. Very dark hair.
Dark hair.
And obviously wore red lipstick as well.
Very red lips. Mm. Very good lips. And she just looked like a film star.
And she acted like a film star.
Yes. God, she was a piece of work, wasn't she?
Yes. But she had a new outfit on every time he saw her.
Every time he came to see her. Yeah. She gave birth to Laurie's love child. And that was Laurie's firstborn. His elder daughter, Yasmin, herself said, well, it was Laurie. She had missed him rather in her childhood.
The Lorna's husband put up with it, and he also said, I will bring up this child as my own.
Well, they met in 37 to 44, 45, really. 1937, but in 1939 she gave birth to the baby. I mean, a novelist could never invent anyone so extraordinary as Lorna, and she kept encouraging him to write more poems and telling him how clever he was.
Someone like that, you know, I said she acts like a film star, but also she had a very big, loving domestic side as well, because whenever she'd arrive with a basket of food.
Oh, yes. She brought everything to him. She brought him records, pictures. The husband, she married at 16.
What?
Yes, she married. She seduced at 14. This is what a piece of work she was. She was one of nine children of a doctor in the Midlands, and there were seven daughters, and they all seduced famous men. One of them married Epstein, the sculptor. The next one married Roy Campbell, the famous South African poet. One of them was seduced T.E. Lawrence, the only woman he ever...
I was going to say.
I know. It's extraordinary.
That's success.
They are an amazing... And they are a book in themselves, The Garments. Anyway, she comes from this background. She is lavish in her generosity and her time. But they love making love out in the fields, even though Sussex at the time was being bombed all the time. I mean, the bombs were... The aircraft
I love
flying.
It. It's like the orgasm comes at the same time as the bomb drops.
Yes, I know. Absolutely. The earth shook. The earth shook again and again for them. And the whole fields were trembling as they made love. It's not offensive, his descriptions of their lovemaking. And he wrote it every day in his diary. So all his diaries were there. In his study, and his wife didn't know that either. But tragically, this was definitely the most wonderful love in his life. He suddenly began to realise that there was someone else, that she was living in London and she was seeing somebody else, this sinister boy, as Laurie called him. He was Lucian Freud, the artist who just arrived from Berlin.
Who must have been very young again.
He also, just a bit younger than Laurie, a couple of years younger. He was 22, already painting portraits. They are pictures of Lorna. She used to taunt Laurie about this boy. Laurie was, I think they came to blows in Piccadilly one night, Laurie and Lucian Freud. What a triangle they were. But anyway, he thought he couldn't possibly get over this. He felt suicidal. He buried himself in work. It's a wonderful story, and he tells it so wonderfully.
Listen to us online, on your phone, download a podcast, or on your tablet. Radio Gorgeous, there for you.
Lorna had three nieces living in the King's Road, aged 16, 18, 19. Two of them were the daughters of Epstein, Lorna's sister Kathleen, and Esther and Kitty. And the third was another of the Garman sisters had married a French fisherman, daughter, Kathy. So she came and lived with her aunt in King's Road and to her two cousins. And Laurie took each of these three girls out in turn. He deflowered Kitty.
Do you think it was all revenge?
Oh, it was. Look, he thinks to himself, all right, I can't have Lorna. Kathy was in her school uniform when he first took her out. She was 14. But the Garman family didn't seem to find this extraordinary.
But it was, as we know, and, was different then.
It was different then. And, of course, certainly by the time she was 16, she was definitely decided that she was going to marry Laurie.
And is that his wife?
That is his wife. And that's his wife still today. And
she's still alive?
She's still alive. She knew that he'd been her aunt's lover, her aunt Lorna's lover. She knew that he would never love anyone else in the same way. She knew about Yasmin. She knew that he'd had a baby. The whole family thought that Lorna was sensational. She was the most dramatic sort of person. They all thought she was amazing. And, of course, her affair after Laurie with Lucian also finished. This is an amazing coda. This is what you couldn't make up in a novel. Lucian was broken-hearted. He also, like Laurie, went in search of one of Lorna's nieces. He married Kitty. Kitty was his first wife.
It's incredible.
Kitty, yes.
I'm dying to know what happened to Lorna. She had these incredible lovers. She had three children. She had a husband.
She became a Catholic. She continued to be a striking figure. And her son, her gay son, Michael, was an artist, and he wrote beautifully too. He wrote a wonderful book called High Diver about being the son of this creature who used to lean over him, who would kiss him goodnight. On the day after Michael's funeral, he died, I think he was only about 60 when he died, Lorna crashed her car and never really got over that. So when I was writing my book, of course I wanted to see Lorna. Of course but I was told she was in a nursing home in a cloud of unknowing with Alzheimer's. There he is, writing Cider with Rosie. He wrote it. It took him years and years. It was commissioned in the 30s. He delivered it in 1959. And, of course, it was an immediate bestseller. This told the story of his childhood in Slad. He wrote all these memoirs, took him the rest of his life to write them, and never acknowledged any of the women I've mentioned, apart from there was a mention of Lorna, this my girlfriend, you know, my beautiful rich girlfriend. He dedicates one book to W.G., who was Wilma Gregory, the woman who kept him, nurtured him, housed him. He was an inborn writer, He had to write things down, and he'd say, what is that summer if it's not remembered, if it's not written down, if it's not recorded? What is that act of love? And he's right. So much of life goes by without being written, unless you are a diarist and a real writer. The truth is much more complicated and much more interesting.
Yes. Valerie Grove, yes. It's been such an honour to be able to have you on Radio Gorgeous today.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Josephine.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production 2015, produced and presented by Josephine Pembroke, edited by Anna Palinkas.